So, the Buddha, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, Thich Nhat Hanh, the Dalai Lama, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, and many, many others. What did all these people have in common? Well, to begin with, they all shared their wisdom with the world. And secondly, they all lived in difficult times. Now, Nana has told us a bit of what the Buddha had to encounter, but all of these people faced things like war, occupation, tyranny, poverty, prejudice, you know the list, right? And they all brought light to the darkness, like the sun in the poem from Hafiz. And for some of them, it cost them their lives. So I've been reflecting a lot on difficult times lately, as probably all of you have. And I was wondering, do difficult times call forth wise teachers because they are so needed, perhaps? And then it occurred to me, I read recently that in all of human recorded history, there has never been a time without war somewhere. So it's always difficult times someplace, right? And even when it's relatively stable and peaceful here, and we have had times like that, there's turmoil somewhere else in Africa or Middle East or South America, Asia. And I was wondering, are there wise leaders that appear in these places that we never even heard of? I'll bet there are, right? In any case, now it's our turn. So how do we manifest the Dharma in our daily lives in these unstable times that we are living in? Well, of course, we have a roadmap, right? The Eightfold Path, which Nina gave us a really nice overview of the Eightfold Path, and these three sections of the path. And I've been thinking a lot about how they work together. And of course, the first section, right view and right intention, it's essential for orienting us toward the possibility of ethical conduct, right? And I have heard many times that the Dharma, the spiritual teachings, are basically reminders of what we already know at a deep level if we can get past our conditioning. So I was thinking, well, what do I already know? Well, first of all, I know about karma, right? I know that I own my actions, that what I put out comes back to me. I know this because it's happened many times in my life. And also, and this is a little more subtle or difficult to perceive for me, but at times when I'm really focused, perhaps in a deep meditation or just maybe out in nature, just really present, I understand that I am not separate from the rest of creation, right? Like Thich Nhat Hanh says, no boundaries. So what I do to others, I do to myself. And I think that right view and right intention are basically reminders to help us get past that conditioning to bring what we already know, the essence of right intention, which is do no harm, to bring that to the forefront of our consciousness and keep it there as much as we possibly can. And then the next section, right speech, right action, right livelihood, ethical conduct. This is how we manifest right view and right intention in the world. You know, how we act and speak at home, at work, with family and friends, with people we don't know, with the larger community, right? And then the last part, right, effort, mindfulness, and concentration. This is essential. All of these are essential for quieting the mind, for focusing the mind, because if we can't do that, we can't keep right view and right intention at the forefront of our minds. We need to somehow cut through all that nonsense that goes on all the time, right? And I've also been thinking of the types of actions that we perform in the world and how all of the Eightfold Path relates to these types of actions. And I think that the majority of the things I do are what I would call habitual actions. Things that I do every day or maybe every week, you know, the toothbrushing, teeth brushing, and the kitchen cleaning, and the garden weeding, and on and on. And I often find myself not at all present when I'm doing these things. And that's when I tend to hurry, I tend to make mistakes, I tend to think that somehow these tasks are boring, and that I need to be thinking about something else so I won't be bored, God forbid. And you know, Carrie Peterson, a few weeks ago in the Monday night sit, was talking about right livelihood and how it's not just paid work, but it's whatever jobs you do, and how you could see these actions as gifts. And that gives a whole different perspective and makes it much more easy to be mindful of them as you do them. And so I was thinking, well, that made sense, you know, when I was raising children and working and doing things for other people a lot. You know, the housekeeping and all of that I was doing for other people as well as for myself. But now I live alone. I'm retired. So most of these things I'm just doing for myself. And then I was thinking, well, I guess it's okay to give gifts to myself. I can see it that way. But then it also occurred to me that sometimes, almost inadvertently, some of these things have become gifts to others. For example, my gardens. Now, I have several gardens. I have a big garden with a friend who lives about 15 minutes from me. But I also have two little gardens at my apartment, one out in my patio and one out in front, and it's a combination of vegetables and flowers. And I certainly thought when I was planting these gardens that they were for me, right? But I find when I'm out tending to them, my neighbors at the apartment complex often come by and say how much they enjoy looking at my gardens. I'm thinking, oh, wow, you know? So now when I'm out there, I think about my neighbors, and I'm not doing it just for me anymore. And also, I played piano. I have all my life, basically. And I practice every day, and often I am on autopilot. I have to practice the piano, sit down, practice the piano. And then suddenly, my neighbors started telling me how much they enjoy hearing me play. And at first I thought, oh my God, they're listening, right? What if I make a mistake? Which of course I did all the time. But I kind of relaxed and about that and started thinking, oh, they're listening. This is for them. I'm not just doing it for me. And then I think about filling the bird feeder. And I have a little bowl of water on my patio for the birds and the squirrels and the neighborhood cats. And then for going for walks and meeting people and smiling and petting their dogs. And I thought, maybe I don't really live alone. I live in a community, right? And how much I enjoy other people's little gardens and their pets and their children, you know? And it made a big difference in my ability to be mindful of what I was doing. So that's habitual actions. Then there are situational actions, things that arise that you do in response to specific situations. And often these are things that we can plan, that we know we're going to be doing them. and we have time to reflect or to dither, right? Oh, should I do this or that? But we also have time to sit with them and, you know, pay attention to what feelings or what thoughts are coming up, especially if it's a big thing we have to do. But other times things just arise, situations arise in which we don't have a lot of time to reflect, and we certainly don't have time to sit with them. And for example, I told you about the friend I share the garden with. I have known her for over 50 years. We are close friends, have been for all that time. We know each other well, we're very comfortable with each other, and we sometimes argue. So a few weeks ago, we really got into it, and I don't even remember what we were arguing about. That's how significant it was. But we were both getting very heated, right? And then suddenly it's like we realized, oh my God, we're acting like four-year-olds, and we just kind of backed off and got very polite. And then I went home, and I wasn't going to see her for another 3 days, but this played around in my mind. And first of all, I was, you know, thinking a lot about how she was wrong and I was right, and how I could convince her that I was right. And then I saw myself going into this pattern that I often go into, which is withdrawing and like, well, when she texts, I'm just going to be very cool. And when I see her, you know, I will just, you know, the thing. But I had enough mindfulness going that I could see it. I could see myself doing it. And so I started sitting with it. I started sitting with my anger and my frustration and how does it feel and what thoughts is it generating. And all of a sudden, I just started to relax, and this little voice says, what would happen if I just let go? Would I really lose anything? And then I, you know, when I saw her, the next day, I think it was all back. Our friendship was there. We'd both processed. She'd been processing, too. But it was an example of how the teachings can break through my patterns, especially if I have enough time to sit with them. And then the other category of actions that I was thinking about is the things that we do, and often in a crisis when there is no time to think. No, zun, zero. You know, we see people in earthquakes or floods just helping each other. They don't know each other, but they're just helping each other. Or people coming on a car wreck and pulling somebody out of a burning car, or jumping into a raging river to save a child or something. And I had one example of that in my life, which was quite extraordinary. It happened, quite a few years ago. My parents were still alive. And my sister and her husband and her little grandson, who was about 3 or 4, were at my parents' retirement home. All the adults were sitting on one side of the room, and I was on the other side, and the little boy was in the corner, and he was kind of underneath this table that my parents had. And it was a small table, but it was very heavy. The base was iron and the top was marble, and they'd put it in the corner to kind of stabilize it. And I was just vaguely aware of him playing under that table. And then suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I saw him reach up and grab the legs to the table and pull. And it started to fall. And the trajectory was right toward his head. He was lying down, and this was one heavy table. And it's like one instant I was sitting in that chair, and the next instant I was catching the table. No thought, none. And, of course, this was a child that I knew and cared about, but it would not have mattered. I knew absolutely it would not have mattered. It could have been any child. There was no separation between him and me. And I thought, this is what people are experiencing in this crisis. And is it possible that when something happens like that, that right action is the default? Interesting question, huh? So anyway, I have been reflecting a lot on how exquisitely these three sections of the Eightfold Path work together. And I'm going to tell you a story which illustrates that. This is a story that I did tell to the Sunday group, and I apologize to those of you who have already heard it, but it is such a perfect illustration that I have to tell it again. This is the story of Leo the cat. Now, Leo is the cat that lives upstairs in the upstairs apartment above mine. A very handsome tuxedo cat. And I had built a little bit of a relationship with Leo, which mostly consisted of me saying hi and him running away. But his humans had noticed that I kind of liked Leo. So when they had to go on vacation, it was a couple months now, they were going away for 2 weeks, they asked if they could hire me to take care of Leo. And I said, yeah, sure. So now Leo and I did not cohabit. He had his apartment, I had mine. But my job was to go upstairs in the morning and feed Leo and let him out, and then he was gone all day. And then I was supposed to go back late afternoon, early evening, let him in, feed him again, right? Easy, except that I never knew when Leo was coming back. And of course, Leo did not know to come to my door. He went to theirs. So I had to keep going out and looking for Leo. Now, his people told me, it's okay if you miss him. What we do, in the morning, he wants wet food and he eats a couple bites, usually, and we put the rest outside the front door with a bowl of water. So he can come back and eat usually during the morning. And so even if he comes back at night and he's missed you, he'll be hungry, but he won't be starving, right? And the other thing is that in back of the apartments, by my patio and their balcony, there is a tree. And they have put a board that goes from a branch of the tree over to their balcony. And Leo can go up that tree, even though he's 15 years old, and he can get onto the balcony, and there's a bed. He has a bed there. So if I miss him, at least he's eaten something. He has a safe place to sleep. But I didn't like that option. I wanted Leo in that apartment, safe, where I knew where he was, and fed. So this day I'm going to tell you about, it was a Monday, because I wanted to do the Monday night sit. And it was a very hot day. And so I was a little unsure about putting the wet food out, you know, in front. But I thought, well, he always comes back in the morning and finishes it off. So I'll go ahead and leave it for a while. But by noon, he had not come back, which concerned me a little bit. But I thought, I just can't leave this out. The day is getting hotter and hotter. So I took it and I put it in their fridge. And then, you know, went about my business. And I said, I'll just watch out for him and see if he comes back. But I didn't see him. And I really wanted him back and in the apartment by 7. But Leo had other ideas. Hadn't gotten the message. I often wish I could just text Leo. It would be so much easier. But anyway, I went out. I started at 5 looking for Leo, and I'm out there every 15 minutes, and he's nowhere to be found. And I'm getting concerned, more and more worried, because he didn't come back for that food. And finally, by 7, I came in, and I did start the sit, you know. And so finally, you know, I'm meditating, and it occurs to me where all this anxiety is coming from. It's coming from when I was the parent of teenagers. And my kids usually got home on time, but occasionally they didn't, and I would absolutely freak out. There was nothing that panicked me more than not knowing where my kids were. And so I was taking all of this anxiety and I was projecting it onto this cat. So I saw that and I started to calm down a little bit, and then I'm thinking, you know, still meditating, and I'm thinking, well, at least I've got the wet food inside, so if he comes back, he's just going to have to sit there and wait for me. And I know he'll be hungry, so he won't leave. And anyway, my mind starts to calm a little bit more, and all of a sudden this little voice says, what would be the kindest thing to do right now? And I thought, oh, the kindest thing. Well, I know what it is. And so I stopped meditating, stood up, went upstairs, got that food out, and put it by the front door. So at least when he got back, he wouldn't have to wait for me. And as I'm coming down the stairs, I'm thinking, well, if he comes and leaves again, fine. He can go up the tree and it's okay. And I came back and I finished the meditation. And then we had the little break. And so I went up to see if he'd been there. And he had. Plate was clean. Cat was gone. And so I'm coming back down and I say, well, Leo, I guess it's the balcony for you tonight. But as I get to the bottom, he comes around the corner. He'd seen me, right? And he wanted in, and he wanted more food. He was really hungry, right? So I got him in. There he was in the apartment. And I'm coming back down to join the meditation again. And I'm thinking, isn't that interesting? We both got what we wanted. He wanted more food. I wanted him safe in that apartment for the night. And here we are. But then I realized the important part of this experience was that little voice that said, what is the kindest thing to do right now? Because it shifted everything. It shifted Leo from this problem in my mind to this living being whom I did not want to suffer needlessly by having to sit there and hungry waiting for me. So it was the perfect example of right concentration, relaxing the mind, focusing the mind enough so that right intention could come to the forefront and lead to right action. Now, there is a sequel to the Leo story, which you haven't heard yet. So a few days after Leo's humans got home, and I gave back the key, I came out the door mid-morning, I guess, to go for a walk, and their car was gone, but Leo was on the stairs going up to his apartment. So I stopped to say hello to him, and he starts meowing at me, and I said, oh, he wants me to let him in, and I don't have the key. And so I said, Leo, I had to give the key back, right? And right. And so he races up to the top, meowing pitifully the whole time, and he's up there, and he's got his little paw, and he's hitting against where the door should open, and meowing and looking at me like, why won't you let me in? And I'm down at the bottom trying to explain about keys and doors to a cat. And he's getting more and more agitated, and so am I. And then his people drive up, whew, and save us both. But you know, that bothered me for several days. It bothered me because I felt so helpless. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't help him. And I realized I'm feeling a lot like that these days, because I see all these people being hurt, in trouble, the planet being destroyed, and I feel so helpless. I feel like I can't do anything. And I realize that I react like from one extreme to the other. Either I read the news and I get angry and I get frustrated, or I get scared, you know, or I just avoid it altogether and try to pretend it's not happening. And neither one is the solution. So I'm thinking, okay, how can I bring the Dharma into that situation, that feeling of helplessness in view of what all is going on? And I thought, well, when I'm angry, maybe I could use what I learned from my anger at my friend, you know? Or when I'm scared and worried, maybe I can use what I learned from worrying about Leo. Yes, take breaks from the news. Don't wallow in it. You know, go on walks, do creative things, garden, go on retreat. But I need to stay informed and I need to keep my heart open. I need to feel the fear and the anger and the helplessness and sit with it and ask myself, what is the kindest thing that I can do right now? And what comes to me, first of all, was the understanding that doing my best to free myself from my conditioning and become a kinder and more compassionate person has to help the world at least a little bit, right? But also, I need to remember the news is not the only thing happening in this world. There are kind people everywhere doing good things for each other every day. And I also need to remember, I do have a voice. I am a citizen of this planet. And maybe my voice by itself can't accomplish that much, but my voice, joined with the voices of millions of other people, people of goodwill, people who value kindness and compassion and justice and honesty, all our voices together, well, who knows? Who knows what might happen, huh? Thank you for your kind attention.